This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from a remote location surrounded by books on all three sides in one of my mini libraries in my house. I have three libraries in my house because I have 4,000 books and I need them. And particularly in these trying times, it's nice that I can just reach out and pick one up and find something to read. I just want to say to everybody, I hope that you're all being safe. It's really difficult. I know it's really difficult to stay in the house, but one of the best things that you can do for yourself is to do exactly what I say at the beginning of the show. Find the joy of reading, and perhaps find the joy of writing. It will really help you, and believe me, as much as I would like to have a gin and tonic, I realize that that kind of thing isn't good for now. We really have to wait until we can get back outside and have some outdoor parties. But right now, what you have to do is try to find something to distract you. Now, what I'm doing, I'm, of course, you know, over the 5 years, I just celebrated the 5th anniversary of Joy on Paper, and I've had so much fun doing this program. But one of the things that I look back now and I'm saying, was my evaluation of a book right? So I've been grabbing books off the shelf, and I have so many of them, and looking at them and saying, do I still feel the same way about that book? One of the books I picked up is called Syracusa, and it is written by Delia Ephron, and I wanted to check it out again to see if I liked it as much as I liked it the first time. Now, I never, when I'm reviewing a book, I never read anything in advance. I don't read anything the publicist send me. I don't even read any of the book jacket. I don't read anything. I just want to have it all coming to me as a surprise. And I remember when I read this book the first time, I really liked it. I was really like, I got into it. I read it a second time, and I just to see why I liked it the first time. And then I got the Audible book, and I must say that I love the Audible book more than the written book. It's just that I think the Audible book is one of the best. The reason is that this is a story about two couples on vacation in Syracusa, Italy. And these four people, and they have, well, one of them has a daughter with them, these four people are intriguing, and the voices that do the narration on the Audible version are perfect. They are just, when you read the book and then you listen to the Audible, you say, yes, that's exactly the voice I expected. Now, it's a strange book in some ways. It's a little bit dark, and right now I think sometimes something a little bit dark, you know, we're all sort of in a dark mood, but it's in a dark in a different direction. It's about a marriage. It's about two marriages and about the deceit and all the dynamics of it. And it's funny that some of the negative reviews, and I now have gone back to Amazon, I saw she has 167 one stars, which is a lot of one stars. And so much of it is that they think it's her life, her, you know, she's one of the characters, and it's not true. She's actually very happily, she was very happily married. Her husband passed away, but she was very happily married for many, many years. And so it's not her, she's not injecting herself in this story. She is actually, it's part of what happens, you know, when you're happily married, you look at other people and you say, what's wrong with those people? And so she took it to the max in this book. And it's really fun. It's a fun read because it is a book where you absolutely don't like anybody. this is it's, so it's very funny. But when I got the book, partly I got it because you know, when they send me a book, the minute I see anything has been in Italy or Sicily where I have been, I'm interested in it because my husband and I, my first honeymoon was in Italy. I was married 3 times, but to the same guy. So that's nice. And I figure, you know, that's not bad. You know, he decided to, we had all sorts of things happening with our weddings, sort of like little disasters, you know, like a Iranian revolution and all sorts of stuff. So we got married 3 different times and 3 different styles of wedding. But the nice thing about it is we had 3 honeymoons. And our first honeymoon was the one through Italy. Now, at that time, we didn't go to Sicily, but later on, I went to Sicily for a film project. And so I was there, and I went to this weird place called Syracusa, which is in English is Syracuse, like in Syracuse, New York. But that town, right on the edge of Sicily, on the southeast edge of Sicily, is weird. You go there, there's not a tree there. It's because at the time when, during the wars with the Romans, they cut down all the trees and nothing was ever planted again. So you get strange wind patterns and you get, it's a strange sort of eerie, a little bit scary place. You know, when Delia went there the first time, she was impressed, and the idea of the sort of, I don't know, the darkness of it and what could happen. You're always happy when you get to Syracuse the first day. You think, oh, this is fantastic. And then you start realizing this is really sort of, there's something off-putting about it. And so she realized that she could do a really great story about two couples. They come there, and of course, everything's going to fall apart, believe me. But the beauty of this story, and when I first talked to her, I used the word exquisite. And the reason I did that is her writing is, she's a fine writer. Well, of course, it comes partly in a major part because of her parents. Her parents were Phoebe and Henry Efron. And they are very famous. If you like old Hollywood movies, TCM, they wrote one of my husband's favorite movies. And it's funny that it is a movie with Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn. If you've seen it, it's about a newsroom research library, and they bring in a computer, which is called Emmerak. And this is one of the early computers where they're still putting the cards in it. And Emmerak stands for Electronic Memory and Research Arithmetical Calculator. And the reason my husband likes it so much is that he actually, when he was in school, this is one of the first computers, style computers in the world, the ones with the little punch cards. And he worked on one of those. He learned some of the first computer language. So he gets a kick out of that. He just loves that movie. And so whenever it's on, we watch it. And I just wanted to, you know, have a look at this book again and see whether I would recommend it. And I do. I recommend it on several levels. One, because if you get into it, you will think about these people's problems and not your own. And it's a highly rated book. Of course, it was a New York Times bestseller. It was one of People Magazine's top 10 books. It was the Washington Post bestseller, Los Angeles, all of them, USA. It was a really tremendous, tremendous success. And I think well-deserved. But it's not what you might initially think you're going to like. The reason that it turns out that you will like it is not because of the characters. And the characters are, there's 2 sets of couples, one from Portland, Maine, and then one from New York City. It's that she draws them so well. Of course, Delia Ephron is all three of her sisters are also writers, and her her sister Nora Ephron, of course, is very famous. And Delia wrote screenplays, and one of them that I'm sure all of you have seen is You've Got Mail and Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. So those are her movies. And what she realized is that if you want to have the movie done the way you want to do it, you better own the book. So when she wrote this story, she did it with the idea that, yes, now she owns it, and the movie will be done the way she envisions it. And when I say envisions, it really is a movie that you see in your head as you're reading about these four people. And as I said, some of them have redeeming value, but you're not sure. But the fun of the book is that you want to see how much comeuppance they get. I mean, you're not sort of hoping for too much from them. You're hoping to find out which one gets the worst deal out of it. So it's just the kind of book that I think you need right now. It's an example. What I like also about it is it's written in four different voices. And if you're a new author and you're just starting off, you might think it's difficult to write four different voices. But I discovered that one of the things, easy ways to do this, is you actually write the four people almost separately. You get into one character and just start writing until you're really familiar with that character. Then you take the next character, you sort of blend it all in, and it works very nicely. And in this book, it works particularly well. So I'm going to play the tape here of my interview with Delia Ephron about her book, Syracusa. She's a fun, fun lady. I really enjoy talking to her. And as I said, we talk here about her being happily married. We talk about how my husband loves the movie. And I think you will enjoy this tape. It's not too long, but I will come back after that and talk about some other books that I think you should be reading. So here's my interview with Delia Ephron.
So I'm going to go to a New York Times bestselling writer who has written, I think it's going to be one of my favorite books because it is an amazing book. And it's Delia Ephron's Syracusa. Hi, Delia, are you there?
I am, Patsy. Thank you very much for saying that.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. First of all, I read it too fast. and then as I'm reading it, I have this ability to bring back images of book pages that I've read before. They just come to my mind, but the entire page. So like every once in a while I get a flash back as I'm reading your book, and I was flashing back to Tender as the Night. And of course, you know, when I was reading your book, as I said, I read it too fast, and I'm going to read it again. And this time, one of the wonderful things I love, well, any author who writes about Kir Royal is a favorite with me.
And thank you.
So, you know, living here in Clearwater, Florida, they don't really drink Kir a lot here, and you don't really see it. And it brought me back to my times of touring Italy and Sicily, and so this weekend it's going to be a nice hot weekend here, and I'm going to make myself Kir Royal, and I'm going to read your book again.
Oh, thank you so much. Have you been to Syracusa?
Oh yeah, I spent a lot of time in Italy years ago when it was still sort of the Italy that was a little bit more romantic, I think, than it is now.
It's not quite Disney the way it is Disneyland with little people dressed up as gladiators roaming around.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, your book really, you know, I was trying to think of a word, just one word. I do that when I read a book. I like one word that I could use to describe that book. And I thought and thought and thought. And then just one word came to my mind, exquisite.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
It is
my
exquisite. Goodness. You know, it's, you know, exquisite means, you know, to be carefully selected and to really search out the choice bits. And your book is simply exquisite.
Thank you very much.
Well,
You know, I mean, this is a book, it's a dark book for me. I mean, it's funny, too, of course, because I'm an Ephraim and I can't help myself, but it was such a dark and wicked book about marriage, and I was in Syracuse, and it's a stone paradise. I mean, the Romans knocked the trees down in like 212 BC to build warships with the lumber, and they never planted any again, and so the ancient footprint still rules, and the buildings are tattered and shredding, and I thought, my God, this is the most beautiful place I've ever been, and the next day I thought, if I don't get out of here fast, I'll go mad.
Well, I think much of Sicily is like that.
I thought, this is where I can explore betrayal and deceit in marriage, where two couples and a child on a trip end up in Syracuse and everything just goes haywire in the marriages.
The suspense. You know, there's more suspense in your book than in most mystery books. I mean, it's just almost from the beginning I realized, oh boy, I'm in for a ride here. And
I was working. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Exactly. You know, I get a lot of books, and I read, you know, I try to read all the books I get. Well, I read nonstop. And then first of all, I looked at the cover, which I tell you, they did a terrific job.
Isn't it spectacular?
It is. And the paper, everything about this book is just top class and exquisite. So then I'm reading the book and I'm thinking, oh my. Sometimes, you know, I worry about, oh, do I want a depressing book about, you know, marriage falling apart, all that kind of stuff. You're in a dark place. But you do it with such, there's always this touch of humor. And, of course, you tell it in the four points of view of the two couples, husbands and wives. And, wow, do you capture them?
Thank you so much. I mean, I wanted to keep, to keep you turning pages, but the tension builds, and it's two couples on a trip, and the child, who is the daughter of Finn and Taylor, she becomes the center of the story, and you're not quite I knew people wouldn't be expecting it. And you're always wondering, is she shy or is she cunning, is she manipulating or being manipulated? Which, by the way, both things are happening, because Michael, who is married to Lizzie, and is they're the other couple. He's having an affair and Lizzie doesn't know it. So he's avoiding Lizzie and he's using the child really to, you know, be amusing to and to charm without realizing that he could be creating a monster here. So there's the way that the couples are playing off each other and the complications that are going on get worse and worse as the trip goes on.
But it's also deliciously complicated. You've done a beautiful job.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's what I did. I sort of started them off. In the first 20 pages, you find out that Michael's having the affair and certainly doesn't want to go on this trip with his wife. I mean, the isolation, the sexual expectations, he wants none of it. So and Lizzie doesn't know, of course. So she has a completely different expectation of what this trip is going to mean to them. And then Finn and Taylor, Finn had had an affair with Lizzie many, many years ago, like 15 years ago, a summer fling, which still has a rosy glow to both of them, and they sort of can't quite help flirting. I think we've all had relationships like that in our lives. So they have a history. And Taylor, who is Finn's wife, is really more in love with her daughter than she is with her husband. And we certainly know couples like that, where the child becomes the more important person in the family to the mother or to the father in some cases, and in this case to the mother. So everything is primed for just combustion.
Oh, well, and how you've done it, it's just... As I said, I'm going to now. My second reading is going to be just very slow.
Oh, to figure out how I wove the plot,
yes, exactly.
I almost lost my mind doing that. That's so funny.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I mean, as I said, when you're reading this book, I know when I started, I couldn't put it down, and I started it actually at 5 in the morning, and read through until I had to come into a program. And then as soon as I finished my program, I ran home, and I had to continue.
Oh, my God, it's such a compliment, I can't tell you. I mean, it's my fantasy that is true. And I've had this wonderful time talking about this book because so many people have felt that way about it, and also they don't see the end coming, which is what really what I wanted.
Yeah, well, we don't want to tell. We don't.
No.
All people have to know is that it's a journey that you just enjoy so much. So I want
you.
People to just start off and not really have any expectations until you just get into the book. And as I said, you said the first 20 pages, once you get there, you're never going to put this book down. But I'm going to have so much fun this weekend just sitting, because you do bring all of that back, all of the feeling of what it's like to be over there and to be,
isolated.
Yes.
In a kind of a place that can turn. One of the amazing things about Syracuse is it's raised, the old section is raised about 15 feet above sea level, so it looks rather remarkable if you see pictures of it. I mean, it's so startling to see this all these old buildings on 15 feet high up, raised up. But then if you start to go crazy, you know, it suddenly looks like Alcatraz. So, you know, there's a way that this place turns along with their vacation. I mean, Syracuse is such an important thing. But, you know, what happened, one of the things that was the idea for this book was that years ago, a psychoanalyst said to me that what we think of as chemistry is really psychology, that two people falling in love across a crowded room is really each spotting their own perfect neurotic match.
Oh, great.
And I found that not only, I mean, just totally chilling, but I have to say that you do look at marriages and you think, my God, aren't they matched? And sometimes it's kind of a toxic way that they're matched, and other times it's just like, I mean, I was aware in my own marriage that, and it was a really long, happy marriage. I mean, I was totally aware of how neurotically perfect we were for each other. But in this case, no, they're matched, but it's toxic. And each couple is matched, but in a toxic way. So that was it. I married that idea to Syracuse, and that's what hatched the book.
So how long were you working on this book?
Really a long time. I mean, I went there, and then I got home, and I wrote, this is told, you know, by four different characters. I wrote the beginning. I wrote each character, and then I thought, I can't go any further without going back. I mean, I wasn't planning to write a book when I was there. I hadn't even taken a photo. So I didn't actually get back there for about 4 or 5 years later, and then I traveled as my characters. And that was really fun, because if I travel alone, you know, just as myself, I just walk and eat. That's my idea of a vacation. But Taylor, in this book, she's a culture person, so I had to go to the Greek ruins, and I had to go see the Caravaggio, and Lizzie goes to the food market, which I do love, and I went to the food market in Syracuse is so divine. It's just humble and beautiful and kind of, you know, 15 varieties of oranges and amazing fresh fish on slabs of ice. And it's just great. And then Finn likes to go to dive bars late at night, and he sort of cruises around on his own, you know, just looking for trouble in a way. And so at 2 a.m, I'm in a bar, you know, with karaoke blaring, and I never would do that, right? And Michael is trying to, you know, get away from everyone. So I had to look for little cafes off the beaten track where he would be hiding out and spiking his coffee with scotch. So his espresso with scotch, I should say. So I traveled as my characters, and it was kind of stunning thing to do, because it made it so much more interesting to travel.
I could tell as I'm reading, I'm thinking, wow, how she visited the Caravaggio, and then she is able to bring this into the story so perfectly.
Mm. It's amazing when you write a novel. It's as if you have this inner compass, almost a subconscious inner compass. I did not know where this story was going. I knew that it was called Syracuse and something big had to happen there, and I knew it was about marriage and betrayal and deceit. And when I wrote a line very early, couples collaborate, hiding even from themselves, who is calling the shots and who is along for the ride. And I knew that that was going to play out in the book. but I didn't. It's amazing that you find these things and you think, gosh, this is the most perfect. The Caravaggio, which is plays a part in this story.
It's like it fell into your lap.
Yeah,
like,
what was it doing there? It was waiting for me. I have a totally personal relationship now to this painting. It's as if it was put there for me. And there's this incredible rock that everyone dives off and suns themselves on, this big, gigantic boulder in the sea. And it's called Lo Scoglio, which means the rock in Italian. And, you know, I photographed it, and I thought, I'm going to use it. And then I made a couple of friends when I was there, this wonderful woman who's an architect, and she went over all my photos with me, and she just told me what everything was and the significance of things. And as I began to write my plot, she helped me place it in locations and showed me in my photos where this might happen or that might happen. And if I hadn't gotten lucky, I mean, I got so lucky doing my research, I could never have written the book.
Well, you know, as I said, when I'm reading it, I'm thinking, you know, did she start with the painting first and then come out with the idea? Everything just, as you said, just blended in so perfectly to the characters, and you made them so real, so full-blooded, really. And, you know, there's a part of you wants to hate some of them, some part of you wants to like part of them. You know, they're all... There's all these complications.
Yes, I didn't ever worry about you wanting to like them. I wanted them to be real, and I wanted them to be trouble and troubled, you know, both things. And so sometimes you completely sympathize, and other times you just can't believe that person did it. And that's sort of what I think is more true to life anyway.
Well, you captured it. I'm going to go and do a review on Amazon, and I'm just going to put the one word.
Thank you.
I'm just going to put exquisite. That's all.
I'm flying for the rest of the day over that. Thank you.
Well, you know, I get a lot of writers on, and I'm always so thrilled to talk to everybody. But I was just so happy when I want to thank particularly Ariane Moore, who from Penguin Random House, who sent me the book. She's always sending me wonderful books, but when I got this one, I just was so grateful to her. Right? They say, "Oh, she just chose the perfect book for me because as I said, you know, having traveled a lot in Italy and Sicily and enjoying that whole milieu of the drinking." drinking,
right?
Yeah, well, we know that a little bit of drinking,
yes.
You know, and
everyone drinks more on a vacation too.
Exactly, and that whole sort of feeling of what it's like to be there, and you capture that so nicely. So even people who haven't traveled are going to have a treat here. They're traveling.
Oh, thank you so much, Patsy.
You know, they travel through your eyes, and which is pretty fantastic. Because while you are an amazing writer in general, I mean, I have to mention, you know, of course, I often ask I always ask writers, you know, what inspired you to write. Well, in your case, I don't have to because you were born writing. I think your parents.
Certainly genes, yes. All four of my sisters are writers. So,
exactly.
You know.
Absolutely genetic. And your parents wrote really, you know, they were so amazing screenwriters. And they wrote one of my favorite movies, Desk Set.
I knew you would say that.
I love that. I love that movie.
Yes. Terrific.
And I think it's and it's funny, it's one of the old movies that my husband loves because it's just there's the computers and there's this and that, you know, going on in there, and so of course they were so fantastic as writers, and then you of course became a screenwriter and wrote one of my favorite movies too, another favorite movie, You've Got Mail.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes. Syracuse is going to be a movie. It's been bought for film.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
And I'm writing the screenplay. Yeah, I'm writing the screenplay right now.
Well,
so that's really fun.
Well, of course, it reads like a movie. That's it. Mm-hmm. You have this visual impact that, as I said, when people are reading it, they're going to feel like they're traveling there anyway, because you do make the whole scene come alive, and it's so wonderful to be able to write a screenplay based on your book.
And, yeah, it's fun to do.
And then not have to give it to somebody who will ruin it. Most authors aren't in that position. Most of them can't do both jobs.
Well, in this case, I have a wonderful director that I know, Alfonso Gomez Rayon, who did Meet Earl and the Dying Girl, and he's absolutely so talented. So, but in truth, in general, you do not have much control, which is why my most precious stories, like Syracusa, I write as books, and then they exist as I imagine them. And also, you know, I love keeping a story moving, and I've learned a lot about how to do that from being a screenwriter. But you can explore ideas about marriage. And, I mean, when Michael says betrayal of this magnitude is the exclusive province of married couples, and I'm exploring the idea that marriage allows a kind of betrayal and love that no other relationship, you know, that other relationships don't, and I'm comparing, and I'm exploring friendships and loyalty versus love, and there's a way you can investigate in a novel that you can't in a screenplay. You pare it down, you're always distilling something to either visual essence or the essence of the relationship or the scene, but you can get wilder with a book.
You know, this ability to write the screenplay and to keep that integrity of your story is a wonderful...
Yeah, it's fun challenge.
Because I know so many writers who've written books and then they're so sad when the movie comes out because they've lost the essence. And I know that in this case, the essence is your words and the entirety of the work. It's really exquisite. That's my Amazon review, and it's going to be up today. And
thank you very much. I'm really grateful for that.
Well, I think
and I'm so happy to talk to you. Thank you for having me on this.
Well, the name of the program is Joy on Paper, because I just have so much joy talking to fantastic writers, and particularly to you, and I will be thinking of you this weekend as I sit with my Kir Royale.
Is it your birthday?
No, it's Clive Cussler's birthday.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, you heard. I've got an interview with him at the bottom of the hour.
It's his birthday. Okay.
85 years old.
Oh, my God.
So
how great.
Yeah, and he has 250 million books out there. So,
good for him. That's impressive.
It is. Okay, and you're impressive. So it was just wonderful
to
talk to you, Delia Ephron, and I want everyone to get out there and read the book before the movie comes out, because it's going to be a year or two. So it's Syracusa, and it's by Delia Ephron. And Delia, thank you so much for being on my program today.
Thank you, Patsy.
Oh, it was a joy. Bye-bye now.
Okay, well, I really enjoyed the book. And when I reread it, last night, I found the same, it's the writing. She, you know, it's funny, I looked at the negative reviews, and they're talking about some editing problems and stuff like that, but that's not as relevant as the actual writing, how she laid out the plot, and I can see that she worked it really beautifully. It's a good example for all of you people out there who want to write a suspense, and suspense is books are very popular. I think she did a great job, and so it was a thrill to talk to her. Now, on another type of book, completely different, not dark at all, a very uplifting book, we're going to play in a minute a promo for Johnny Clark, and he's written a very funny book called Section 8. His most famous book is Guns Up, which is a best-selling book about Vietnam. And then after that, he wrote Gunner's Glory, which was based on the story of Medal of Honor Marine Mitchell Page. And that's also an inspirational book. But recently, he released a book that talks about a really spiritual event that happened to him. And it's a very touching book. It's called Walk a Little Farther with Me. And it's by Johnny Clark, and I love Johnny because he spells it the old-fashioned way. I think it's a West Virginia way. Johnny with a Johnnie. You don't see that very often. And the interesting thing about Walk a Little Farther with Me is that he encountered a miracle. And when you read the story, and I know him, he's been in the studio many times, when he talks about this, what event happened to him, you will be very moved. But he also has this funny sense of humor, and he wrote a hilarious book called Section 8, and Big Ed in the control room did a promo, a beautiful promo, one of the best promos I've ever heard for a book. And we're going to play that because you can check Johnnie Clark, as I said, with that nice West Virginia spelling, and get his books, whether you want the inspirational one, whether you want the action one, all of the Vietnam books, or just a real funny book about the time, well, listen to this promo and you'll find out we almost lost the Marines. Here we go.
From the author of gut-wrenching novels Guns Up and Gunner's Glory, now a gut-wrenching comedy, Section 8. One fan writes, Section 8 is inspired insanity. Johnnie Clark should receive the Pulitzer Prize and his commitment papers in the same ceremony. You will laugh till it hurts. Section 8. It's 1946, and President Harry Truman has two goals in life. Dump the U.S. Marine Corps and get reelected. Can he convince Congress that the Marine Corps is obsolete? He'll try. But first, he wants to use them one last time. There's something he needs them to do. A little mission to China to steal something that one of his contributors need. It's dangerous, but who cares? Marines are expendable, or so he thinks. What could possibly go wrong? A lawsuit by the Vatican? An attempted assassination by a dead assassin? Flamethrower sermons? If that's not enough, there's a missing A-bomb. This book has it all, even a love story. Remember, Section 8 is only a temporary state. You Hope, written by a true American hero. You'll love this book, now available on Amazon. So get it today. Section 8 by Johnnie Clark. Semper Fi.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I want to talk a little bit. I've been trying to encourage you to read series, because what I love, you've heard about immersive learning. Immersive learning is, I think, the best way to learn a subject. When I homeschooled my boys, I believed in immersive learning. In other words, when they got that sort of math bug, when they started getting interested, first, we got interested in algebra, which we turned into a mystery game, because in algebra, you're always looking for X. And so Mr. X was our mystery, a character in our house, and we did all of their algebra. They were doing algebra. Both of them were doing algebra at the age of six. Well, six, yeah, they started at six and seven. And it was just, it was fun. And I realized at that point I had seen that their enthusiasm was growing as they started getting the concept of numbers. And we quickly went into geometry. Geometry is actually the most fun, I think, area of math, because there's so many things you can do with it. And so I just let them immerse themselves. This is what happens in school. I think so many kids get turned off of math because they do the same thing over and over. And every year they do so much, and then they forget it over the summer, and then they come back and they have to start all over again. Immersive learning is when you really are hooked on a subject and you just study it until you know it, and then you can sort of put it aside. Maybe one day, like they learned, in my boy's case, they learned algebra and geometry and trigonometry when they were very young. Then they didn't use it for quite a few years until they went off to university and all of their courses sort of kicked in, the big courses, and they saw the relevancy of having all of this all sort of already in their brain, and they didn't have to stress and strain when they're doing, whether they were doing organic chemistry or physics. They already had that strong math background. And the same with a language. Immersive learning is always the most successful learning of a language. And you can do that. That's one of the things during this terrible downtime, that you just pick a language and get a, you know, if you don't have to buy one of the fancy, expensive programs, although they're nice. If you can afford it, just immerse yourself. Say, I'm going to learn, I'm going to learn French. I'm going to learn Italian. And work on it for the next four weeks. We think it's going to be 4 weeks. And you will be amazed at your progress. So immersive learning is great, and immersive reading is wonderful because you get lost in the characters. You become so attuned with them. Right now I'm immersed in Peter Riva's books set in Africa. I have read all of them. I've listened to the Audible version. And the reason I've done that is that his character, his main character, an African guide, is somebody who I would love to know. I would love to be able to just meet him. I know he's a character. Part of my mind knows he's a character. On the other hand, I can't help but feel that I could, once this is all over, I could fly to Africa, and somewhere over there, he would be. His name is Mbuno, and he's just a person that you would want to know, somebody who is calm and strong and exactly the kind of person we need today. And so Mbuno has become a part of me. And that's the wonderful thing about being a reader. And, of course, when you get to a writer who can do that kind of thing to make you forget that a character is a character. And if you're looking for a nice, long series, I highly recommend Sue Grafton's ABC Alphabet Books. You know, she started in, I think it was 1982, with the letter A. A is for alibi. And she introduced a character, Kinsey Millhone, who is a sort of hard-knock PI, and it's set in Santa Teresa, which is really Santa Barbara. And it's a very regional book. And I've always liked books set in Europe. I never really liked books set in California. So when I started reading her, she was really the first one that I said, whoa, I like the place, I like the time. And Kinsey is a fascinating character. And I love Sue Grafton. She passed away recently. And, you know, she wrote the, she was on the program, and I joked to her, I wish she was doing a different alphabet, one of those, the Croatian or something, where they have 54 letters instead of the 26 that we have. And she almost made it. We got to Y, and so we did. She was on the program for, quite a few of the letters, including X, Y, and we were looking forward to having her here for Z. But she didn't finish it. I know she probably has lots of notes on it, but I don't think anybody will finish it for her. And the interesting thing, when she was on my program, I said to her, well, why haven't you sold this? Because she could have made millions and millions of dollars selling the rights to these books to Hollywood. But she had worked in Hollywood, like me, and she's very funny. We had many things in common. She had worked in a laboratory when she was young, and I worked in a laboratory when I was young. So every once in a while in her books, you'll find a reference that is something that a lab rat will know. So she might describe somebody's sweater as being urine yellow. And of course, we knew the color of urine, the pH levels of urine, just by the look of them. And we both did a lot of that kind of stuff. So I was just really connected with her in many ways, and I really admired her writing. Her books are great, and she didn't get to 26, but she got 25 wonderful books, and I want to just play one of Rita Moreau's beautiful book buzzes for Sue Grafton. You can start with A is for Alibi, but and just keep going through the alphabet. So here's Rita Moreau's book buzz.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on Book Buzz. If you are like me as a fan of Sue Grafton, you are wishing there were more letters in the alphabet. Having followed Kinsey Millhone from the beginning with A is for Alibi, you've got to ask yourself, will Kinsey find closure or love? Sue Grafton first introduced Kinsey in the alphabet series all the way back in 1982, and since then, both writer and heroine have become icons and international bestsellers. Sue Grafton is back with her 25th book in her alphabet series, Y is for Yesterday, and it's due out on August 22nd. Here's the buzz. This will be the darkest and most disturbing case Kinsey will tackle. A vicious sociopath with a grudge against Kinsey. In this book, you have to ask yourself, will Kinsey discover what Y stands for? Chilling. Y is for Yesterday, expected out on August 22nd. I can't wait. Get it online when it's out on August 22nd. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, click on Book Buzz with Rita Moreau. Buzzing off for now.
Okay, thank you, Rita. Rita is so wonderful. She loves to do these book buzzes, and she herself is a wonderful cozy mystery writer, and you can find her books on Amazon. They're fun, and I'm just so grateful that she comes on the program and does these book buzzes because, you know, as I mentioned, authors, it's difficult for authors. Once they write a book, they have to go out there and promote it. Usually you only get coverage during your release date. And in this case, you know, it's nice that I'm able to bring back some of these books that people might have forgotten. And I do hope that you will try both the Sue Grafton series, Johnny Clark's wonderful inspirational book. I think it's a book that makes you sort of stop and think, yes, you know, miracles do happen, and this is a time when we want to have miracles, and it's called Walk a Little Farther with Me, and I was really touched when I read the book, so I hope that you'll get that. And, of course, Syracusa, well, it's a book that, well, as she said, they're going to make a movie. It's going to be a fascinating movie. I can tell you that. And that's part of the fun when you know something is going to be made a movie, to as you're reading it, to think, well, would I keep this scene in? Would I keep that scene in? And it is being such a great, very, very fine author, scriptwriter. She absolutely knows how to do it. So I think it's going to be a great film once it comes out. Of course, nobody's doing anything right now in Hollywood, and it's going to be a little while. And I can tell you, it's you know, you have to do something while we're going through this, and you run quickly out of movies that you want to see on streaming video, because they need more product, and that's what I'm trying to do here. Every week, I select authors whose books I think not only are great as books, but also books that will hold up and would make wonderful films. Because that's what I want to do. I just want to help all you authors out there. And I appreciate, also, I want to tell you all your kind and very nice emails that I've gotten in reference to the 5th anniversary of Joy on Paper. It's been fun. Wasn't March, what didn't turn out exactly like I had hoped. I had hoped to do a lot of things. I was scheduled to do speeches and have a party and all sorts of things, but everything's sort of tossed aside for a while, but we will get back to it. And it's just a matter of being strong and believing and being careful. Please, people, be careful. Sometimes I don't understand people when they are just ignoring the directives. So get your head clear. If you're so busy reading or writing your book, and you can, it's amazing, you can write a book in a month. My wonderful, wonderful goddaughter, Kanisha, has done it 3 years in a row. She has written a book during National Novel Writing Month. And if she could do it, you can do it, and just have fun with it. And one of the things I just want to remind you is that one of the things I always say is that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're lucky, and somebody like Sue Grafton is going to be, her books, actually I think her family will sell them. She didn't want to see them done, but I have a feeling Sue Grafton's books will also land up in streaming video. But definitely Nora Ephron's book, and I wish they would pick up some of Johnny Clark's books, because he has some really great books that would make wonderful films. But meanwhile, just keep writing and enjoy the time. Fill your life with joy and all love all the people around you, because you're stuck with them. And figure out what it is you love about them. And everybody has something that you can love about them. So just, again, if you have any questions about query letters, if you've decided to write, or you need help or suggestions on things that where you can get help. Oh, my goodness, I forgot to mention Angela Hunt. Please go to Angela Hunt Books. She is doing a seminar for writing children's books. It's a fantastic seminar. I have signed up for it. It's going to be online, and it's going to be 3 days this coming weekend. It is going to be fascinating, and it's very reasonable. You can either take 1 day, 2 days, or you can take all 3 days and get a real big discount, and it will be well worth it. And join us there. It's AngelaHuntBooks.com. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, who is keeping everything going at the studio, and I know it's not easy, and I appreciate everything you do, Ed. Thank you. And I'm sure he is saluting me, and I will salute him. And again, Ed, thank you so much for everything. Bye-bye now.